Good morning, everyone. This is Sunday, September 6, 2015. We welcome you to our roundtable. The subject today is man. Before we start on that subject, we'll do a little with our subject, man, and then we will get into miscellaneous writings today. But I wanted to talk briefly about watching, something that always seems to need to be mentioned and people reminded about it and how to do it. Very, very important work. Mrs. Eddy cited it as one of the most important work. Could anyone tell me briefly what constitutes a good watch?
Well, starting with the allness and omnipotence of God, really getting a good grasp and delivery on that, and then handling anything that comes to your thought that is in your experience in the world that's discordant, and absolutely blow it away with the truth of God, and handle each thing looking out to the world and to everyone in it, and then ending with the omnipotence and glory of God, that He governs all.
Very good. Thank you, Dale. Remember that you start with the allness of God. You get into any specific error, you handle it specifically. You know, yesterday in our Bible class, it was interesting how Jesus handled specifically the error of the human mind of the lawyer. He handled it specifically and so well, and the lawyer didn't even know what hit him. So we handle it specifically with truths that you know will handle it specifically, and then you come back round full force with a crescendo of the allness of God. When your watch is over, you should get a sense of peace and the sense that God is all, and this, whatever it is you're working on, is a false belief, a mesmeric suggestion that you will not allow in your consciousness.
And you will know that you've handled it, the error, that is, when it no longer has any reality to you. When you've handled an error, it will seem like a bad dream. It will not have any reality in your consciousness.
Now, that doesn't mean at times it might come back, you know, and it's not necessarily the same belief, but then again, you hit it again, and you keep at it. We just keep at it. It's the drop of water on the great rock, which eventually causes the great rock to crumble. Thank you, those who have signed up for individual watches. Again, very important. Anyone else on watching?
I think it's usually 10 affirmations.
Yes. 10 affirmations to what?
One denial.
Yes. And when I first started out, I'm telling you, I was 10 denials and one affirmation. And I remember we used to have to get up in class and read our watches. And, you know, mine was blown away for that. I had no idea it was so negative. So make sure that you don't end up feeling that the error you're working on is all powerful. Then you've really done a very, very bad watch. Might as well not have done anything.
It's consistent with what Mrs. Eddy says in her article from Miscellany, watching versus watching out, to watch against a negative watch. That alias, in other words, is no watch at all.
Thank you. That's an excellent article to study. Watches, prayers, and arguments is one you all should have if you're going to be watching. This, too, I want you to keep and be familiar with. We've had it in watches, and some of you are familiar with it. It's on page 220 of Miscellany. And it's Mrs. Eddy saying, each day, I pray for the pacification of all national difficulties, for the brotherhood of man, for the end of idolatry and infidelity, and for the growth and establishment of Christian religion, Christ's Christianity. I also have faith that my prayer availeth, and that he who is overturning will overturn until he whose right it is shall reign. Each day I pray, God bless my enemies, make them thy friends, give them to know the joy and the peace of love. That is one beautiful prayer. Something to consider. There are certain things we need to handle every day. She lists them here. You know, last night we took up, and we must. We should be handling this every day, what we handled last night. Christ's Christianity, the brotherhood of man, and the growth and establishment of Christian religion. That should be a daily prayer for all of us. What are some other things we should handle daily?
In this era about poverty and hunger, I mean, everywhere you pictures and all this, this is just not right.
Thank you.
Racism.
Yes.
Violence.
Violence, yes. All of these things that come to mind, one certain one to handle every day is the weather. We don't take it for granted. It must be handled every day. Mrs. Eddy had workers in her home handling it every day. And it doesn't matter if in your community you're having lovely weather. There are people in the Midwest or the West or the East or wherever that perhaps are not. And we've been pretty well taught that there are mortal minds who work on this adverse weather. I know Storm Sandy was so abnormal. It was wicked. It wasn't just some little hurricane. Handle it every day, knowing God's control over the weather, the elements. Mrs. Eddy says it's easier to do that than sin, disease, and death, because there's no mortal mind necessarily associated with it. Anyone else on what we handle daily?
That God will raise up someone who will lead this country with principle.
Thank you. Our government?
Well, I think government's everywhere, all over the world.
Absolutely.
Sickness, disease, and death.
Yes. A lot to handle here. Well, Materia Medica, that it's growing and taking over. One we are to handle daily.
Also, to pray for prison reform and for those who are in prison.
Thank you. One of our more recent Love is the Liberator, we have some articles on how much Mrs. Eddy worked on prison reform, and praying for those. And she says that that love glides into the prison cell. It reaches everyone everywhere. We also need to handle Romanism, communism, or any tyranny. We need to handle for our church the encroach of human organization, as in the BOD. Now, it might sound like a lot to be handling, but it only takes one right thought to destroy and repel the wrong thought. And with God, one is a majority. Anyone else?
Yeah, I was thinking in science and health, really the antidote to this Materia Medica, you know, raging, that it is that everyone is receptive to this book, but it has the answer to all our human problems.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
One of our 100 attractions What I mean by that, knowing that the only attraction is the attraction of the spirit, so that God will attract people to our church, not just online, but to nature.
Thank you, Benjamin. Absolutely. It's very important. The readings coming up on Wednesday are going to be very good, and it's handling the idea that our youth could have false idols. And our Tuesday night watch, I've decided we are going to be handling that, this false attraction, that anyone could be attracted to drugs and liquor and immorality and pop culture, all of that. We are to obliterate. There is the one attraction of spirit, what everyone yearns and wants. But we've got to do this work. Thank you.
We have to also handle manipulation and reversal.
Thank you. Yeah, and at the end of the watch, we know the watch cannot be reversed. It goes forth with power to accomplish whereunto it is sent. The watches must have the clout and vigor in them. Bob from Colorado sent me this, and it's from the Blue Book, page 49 or 50, where Mrs. Eddy says, God demands a more Christian, zealous, and persistent effort to resist evil and overcome, or our cause will again be covered by the rubbish of centuries. God has said, do my prophets no harm, and inasmuch as you bless them, I will bless you. But the strange infatuation to forget and not watch causes the worst of results and leaves the students at the beck of sin. Oh, may the divine love keep you from sleeping and bless you forever. And in that, he likened, you know, he went back, because he was the one who sent me about Laugh, the sheepdog, and he went back to that and reiterated how natural it was for Laugh to watch, how natural it was for that sheepdog to be obedient and want to obey her master, and what joy it brought. So when you don't feel like watching or when you don't feel like obeying God, remember that you're being handled. You're taking up suggestions from animal magnetism, and you need to clear it out and get back where you know it's natural and right to obey God and to do this, the watches. And as you do that, you become an example for others, and certainly for those in your home, and a great blessing to those in your home, because they will feel the power of your work and the power of these watches. And you cannot watch for the world and not be blessed yourself. There's one other thing. You know, we work every day to know all our members are protected in God's love. The standard bearers are that we're this church's, yes, do mine anointed no harm. We are in the secret place of the Most High, all of us. Anybody else? I'm watching. Okay. The lesson, the golden text, Malachi. Have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? So comments on what does that really mean? And what is the real crux of this lesson?
I think it's the oneness of God and man, not in quantity, in quality. We are one. All. One.
Thank you.
Loving one another and going all the way, as Jesus explains in this lesson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, this is the answer to all of this racism and all of this stuff. I mean, in science, there's no such thing.
And I mean, he tells Peter that he should forgive 70 times 7.
Thank you. To me, the theme of this lesson is the whole duty of man is what?
To love another as yourself. To love all.
Love God and then love man.
Yeah, yes. There's one before that.
Right.
Before you love all.
Love God.
Absolutely.
What does that mean, to love God? We went over that pretty fast, but what does it mean to love God?
Do His will, obey Him. Follow the commandments, the Beatitudes.
Okay, to obey what, though? Say Him. Who's Him? What is Him?
Principle, spirit, mind, love, truth, all of the seven synonyms. Demonstrate them in your life. Know that He alone is God, like the lesson is telling us, the oneness. I mean, if you don't love your fellow man, how can you love God? You have to start there.
That is the point.
Yeah. Does everybody really love the truth? You love the truth so much that you just blow up at error? You just annihilate it? You rip it to shreds when you see something that's wrong?
Ask yourself. Go over. I mean, what is the truth? What is the truth to you? That's why we study science and health in the Bible, so we understand the truth. God's word is the truth. Do you love it or do you resist it? And this is last, the sheepdog, loving to obey this master. Slightest command, it was right there. Loving to watch.
She didn't have to think about it.
No, it's just what she is, and it is what you are.
When the still small voice speaks to you, do you have to think about it? Do I obey it or not?
It gets where it should be, instinctive obeying.
And if we all have one Father, we're all brothers and sisters. All of us. We don't have German brothers and sisters or South American brothers and sisters. We have God's brothers and sisters.
And there should never be anything in our heart concerning that race or color or any of that. We are all equal and one in God. And if there is anything in that, it needs to be totally destroyed, because this is the truth. We are all brothers and sisters. If it seems to be otherwise, then we correct it in our own thinking. And at times, it certainly does seem to be otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, do you really think that every Muslim is your brother and sister?
You're thinking right, yes.
Yeah, because they're not Muslim. They're God's child, in truth. That label is a false label, isn't it?
And at night, before you go to bed, make sure you're not holding any resentment toward anyone. Let it go. Know the truth about it. Just as this beautiful prayer of Mrs. Eddy's that she ends, you know, may my enemies love you and learn to know your joy, how we pray. It's such a beautiful prayer to work with. So in this lesson, there were examples of the whole duty of man. Let's see, a few of you mentioned some fairly. Did someone else about forgiveness? What were some of the other examples of the commandments and or beatitudes? This is you. This is your whole duty.
Being ready to see a need and, with God's direction, supplying the need, because we all can do more.
Thank you. Luann told us the story yesterday. I want her to tell it today because it is a perfect example of the story of the Good Samaritan in modern day. Now, Luann, do you remember what you said? We found a phenomenon. People tell me these most interesting things in the week, and then I call on you to tell me, and you kind of give me a blank look. What are you talking about?
Thank you so much. I didn't know which one.
Oh, well, that's right. So I'm sorry. I'll be more specific. Okay, go ahead, Luann.
Well, I was sitting on a friend's porch in a village, and a car passed by, and it was on fire. And the people inside didn't realize the car was on fire until they stopped at the stop sign. And the flames came up the side of the car, and by that time, I jumped off the porch and run over there and told the people their car was on fire. And the stop sign was situated between two gas stations, and the pumps were about 40 feet away on both sides. And so I ran into the gas station, and I asked the attendant there where his fire extinguisher was, and he said he didn't know. And then I said, well, there's a car on fire outside by your pumps. I need the fire extinguisher. So he said, it's in the storage room, but you can't go back there. So I went back there anyway, and I found the fire extinguisher behind some stuff and ran out and put the fire out. There was another fellow there who had gotten a fire extinguisher from the other gas station, and he helped. And then when we put the fire out, I went back into the gas station, and the guy said, well, what am I going to do with my fire extinguisher? How am I going to get it filled? And he was worried about losing his job. And, you know, I was like, I just saved two lives out there, and I saved your gas station from blowing up. You know? Put the fire extinguisher down on the floor in front of the door and walked away and went back home. When I got home, I went back on the porch, and the fire department was just showing up. They took care of the rest of it. Nobody knew who I was or anything. It was just reacted in a way that made sense to me. And everything else that he was trying to apply to it didn't make sense at all. So I just kept going with what was true.
No, he didn't want to give her the fire extinguisher. He thought, oh, no, this belongs to the gas station. You can't have it. What'll I do? I might lose my job. So who was he in the story of the Good Samaritan?
The priest and the Levite.
Yes, he was. Unbelievably so. And even after she saved two lives, and probably from both gas stations from blowing up, there wasn't any thank you or anything. It was, well, why don't you go fill it up for me? And, you know, what's going to happen if I lose my job?
Human mind is really terrible.
It is. It's laughable. It's so ridiculous. And to look at it that way. So I just thought that was a modern day example of it. And as Lillian said yesterday, Lillian?
The Levite and the priest were worried about what if they did help the Samaritan, and the Samaritan...
What would happen to them?
What would happen to them if they did help this person that was in trouble? And the Samaritan said, what would happen if I didn't help this person?
Thank you. There you are, the unselfish, unselfed thought will lead you to do the right thing. And if that is true, it can't be, as Tom brought out, about the human do-goody stuff, which is damning. But when you forget self in caring about your neighbor, then God takes over, and something very wonderful will happen. You know, there was a story a while ago of a father, he was caught under a tractor or something, and his two little children lifted the tractor. I mean, there was no way they could have actually done that, except it was they were not going to let their father be harmed, and it was just the Spirit of God taking over and enabling them to exhibit that strength to do it. And they did, and they saved their father. And it was in the papers a few years ago, but it was a wonderful example of that. you get out of the way and let God take over in your love for your brother.
I thought what Florence wrote about the citation in Galatians was very helpful, was very good, about bearing one another's burdens, and every man shall bear his own burden. Florence, do you remember what you said about that? Because I thought it was very, very, very good.
At a glance, it seemed like a contrast, you know. You see, bear another's burden, and then somewhere down, I think verse 6, it says, bear your own burden or something like that. I'm not quoting it exactly. But thinking about that, it's like, you know, you have to do your work in order to be able to bless someone. You know, that's bearing another's burden. But then you have to bear your own too, which is preparing yourself for the work.
I thought that was very good. We are all responsible for our own actions. We are responsible for ourselves. But part of our job is to look out for one another, help out when someone needs help.
Oh, and I think it's also like Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, I think it's their mission were both individual and collective. They didn't, you know, do the work for just themselves. Clear example of how we should be working.
Yeah, we are all part of the community of mankind, aren't we? Nobody's a loner. Nobody is everything. We all have our part to do.
I know for me, without Christian Science, it seemed like a burden to maintain compassion for other people. So, grateful for being here, because it seems so much easier now. It doesn't seem like a burden to be compassionate.
Thank you. Remember, you are the image of love. You express the compassion of Christ. That's who you are. But you have to declare it for yourself. Many people naturally are. I mean, Bella is everywhere helping people. Many people just are naturally that way. Some people have to work at it a little bit. And Mrs. Eddy says, a test for you, I remember being so stricken by this years ago, is if you can love other children, if you have children, as you love your own. If your love is exclusive for your own children, you are in the human. And as
that's
you,
where parental competition comes in. There's a lot of that.
Competition?
Well, competition, I mean, parents with their children,
right?
You know, wanting theirs to be better than the other one at sports or whatever.
Yes.
There's a lot of that.
There is.
Right, and they wonder why their children grow up to be brats and unhappy.
And self-centered. But we must love.
Or the lawyer wanting to know exactly who his neighbor was.
Right, and hoping it was just his own family and next-door neighbor, counting on that to be the answer. Thank you, Betty. And as you grow in science, you will feel a love for all mankind. Something changes in you. I came from a very clannish family. It was not good. It led to a lot of unhappiness for me because it was self-centered and selfish, and how can you be happy? And yet it was all I knew, and it was the best I knew, so I clung on to it until I learned better. We should love all of us here, and I think we all do have a deep affection for each other. As brothers and sisters in Christ, these are our true brothers and sisters.
To me, this goes back to the theme of we all have one Father, because we live in this world of sin. And so we all fall short at one point of time. And when we see the next person falling short, we need to be there as a brother or sister to help out.
Thank you.
Right. And remember, when we see something in someone else,
yeah.
It's because it is in us.
Yes.
And that's what I think that's what Betty is saying in citation 4 in Science and Health.
Okay, what were we saying?
So before I was so interrupted. But in citation 4, when we forsake matter for spirit, it confers upon us an enlarged individuality, a wider sphere of thought and action, and a more expansive love, and a higher and more permanent peace.
Thank you. And that goes directly to what we were saying. You don't lose your identity. Your identity becomes greater, richer, wonderful. The closer you get to God, it's your true identity as His child. Because some people fear that they're going to lose their individuality. No, He created you. He is your individuality. And the more you know and love Him, the more your individuality will be all the brighter and more wonderful, just the list that Gary just read.
And this is something that's worth repeating, because it is such an important concept of who we are. We are all individual. We're all, you know, nobody's the same as anybody else. And yet, nobody is limited. Now think about it. You're unique, you're individual, but you have no limitations. You are as infinite as God, because you're made out of the things that God is.
And you are the expression of God's being. You're not God, but when you get yourself out of the way, God expresses Himself through you. And that is a wondrous thought. Hold to that. Remember, correct identification. There's one other story in this week's lesson that goes along with the whole duty of man, and that is
childlike.
Thank you. Childlike. Don't lose that. Your wonder, your joy, your trust, your innocency, your ability to forgive and forget, your willingness to change, all that's childlike, not childish, but childlike. All right, we better get to miscellaneous writings, page 34, starting with line 28. Who would like to volunteer to read that whole passage? So, Sharon, are you going to call on someone then?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, call on me then.
Oh, thank you. Tom, go ahead. Thank you.
Did you call on me?
I called. Yeah. We called on you.
Okay. Oh, gosh, I got to volunteer. All right. I'm starting with line 29, right?
Question.
28.
Yeah, 28. And I'm going to page 35, line
14.
Gotcha.
Read the whole answer.
Got it. Okay. Who is the founder of mental healing? The author of Science and Health, with key to the scriptures, who discovered the science of healing embodied in her works. Years of practical proof. Her homeopathy revealed to her the fact that mind instead of matter is the principle of pathology, and subsequently her recovery through the supremacy of mind over matter from a severe casualty pronounced by the physicians incurable, sealed that proof with the signet of Christian Science. In 1883, a million of people acknowledge and attest the blessings of this mental system of treating disease. Perhaps the following words of her husband, the late Dr. Asa G. Eddy, afford the most concise yet complete summary of the matter. Mrs. Eddy's works are the outgrowths of her life. I never knew so unselfish an individual.
Thank you. Any comments?
Why do you think she put this in the book? I mean,
I thought maybe it was put in there because there's such a resistance to her being the discoverer that it's really part of the science.
Thank you. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, this is not personal, is it? Somebody could accuse her of being kind of personal, right?
Yeah, and trying to claim ownership, but she was not. And she knew that this had to be, that people had to see her for what she is. You know, I'm going to read you some things now because this is a hugely important point. This isn't some just nice paragraph. Oh, yeah, Mrs. Eddy. Well, that's nice. It's a hugely important point. I love it where she has said to a student one day, she said, "As Mary Baker Eddy, I am the weakest of mortals. But as the discoverer and founder of Christian Science, I am the bone and sinew of the world." She knew who she was. She knew how Era would attack her. We can never, I mean, we can read about it and think, oh my goodness, but even after reading about it, we really don't know unless we stood in her shoes what Era did to try to break her, and it never could. And then, this is in Collectania, page 53, she says to Edward Kimball, "For the world to understand me in my true light and life would do more for our cause than aught else could. This I learned from the fact that the enemy tries harder to hide these two things from the world than to win any other point. Also, Jesus' life and character in their first appearing were treated in like manner. And I regret to see that loyal students are not more awake to this great demand in their measures to meet the enemy's tactics." Think about it. I mean, even I've been told, I have a Wikipedia, the description of Mrs. Eddy is not a favorable one.
Yes, it's not at all.
Thank you.
I kind of like to put this into different terms. When you look at it in a certain way, lots of people have done mental healing, okay? So it's not unique to Mary Baker Eddy, mental healing per se, okay? But it's the definition of mental healing which makes what she did unique.
Well, that's true. Her mental healing was far different. So much of the other, as we've talked about, was faith cure. But hers eradicated error. And no one else has done that.
I think that's a distinction that people need to make, because that's where this ends up saying, you know, from her husband's quote that she was unselfish, okay? Because that's recognizing where the mental healing has come from, which makes her different than everybody else who said they came up with some sort of system or form of mental healing.
Thank you.
Well, I think she explains it. You know, Jesus healed spiritually, and he taught his disciples how to heal. But he didn't leave an explanation of the science behind it. That was left for Mary Baker Eddy to discover. She discovered the science, behind, and this is maybe this is what you mean, Tom, by the definition.
Well, I'll give an example, okay? There is a Christian Science branch church that repeatedly had someone come and one of the people who give lectures come and talk, and their talk was about that there are other forms of alternative healing. These are Christian Scientists.
Wow.
And they're saying that, oh, these wonderful things that Mary Baker Eddy came about, we're seeing evidence in what other people are doing in alternative methods.
Yes.
Okay, and that's because we don't understand what Mary Baker Eddy did.
Right, and it's because the movement, the board of directors, the lecturers, have all suppressed a knowledge of Mary Baker Eddy's life. She has warned us that unless we are knowledgeable about her life and what she did and went through, we really can't practice Christian Science.
Thank you.
I mean, this is no different than something I read on the Boston Church website a few years ago, but they referred to Mary Baker Eddy as another religious leader.
She's not another religious
leader.
She is not, but this is what we are talking about. Thank you, Tom. It's so watered down, and it gets where they, put her, or it gets into this new age, this watered-down positive thinking with no morality, no Bible. This is why we do our Bible study, because we have to know everything she gave us was Bible-based, and it's not just positive thinking without God or morality or the Bible. I will read this to you, Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, page 58, which relates directly to what Gary just said. And this is in the year 1902. Take up at once the so-called Christian Science lecturers that they do their duty to their God and their poor, unworthy leader and friend. A city that is set upon a hill cannot be hid, and the life of their leader must be shown as it is. Never did I neglect Jesus in my sermons in the first days of Christian Science. Now they must not forget me. The scandalous attacks on the discoverer and founder of Christian Science will stop if the truth about her be shown to the world. Even then they were doing it. Just what Gary said, what Tom is saying. They would obliterate anything they could about her. And then, I think I told you years ago, I was horrified at my college. There was a lecturer on hypnotism. And the guy started out with talking about Mrs. Eddy and how she was a hypnotist and how she had a phone after she passed on. She had a phone in her coffin. I was appalled. And believe me, he heard a few things from me. But, I mean, that's just one example. You multiply that. That is why, anytime we can, we must correct this false impression people have of Mrs. Eddy, and we do that mainly by living the life.
And that's why she put this question in the book. Because she knew that if people didn't appreciate what she did and what she stood for, and what she discovered, they would not be able to practice Christian Science.
Yes. And this is why we emphasize so much the Carpenter books, which explained her life, and why that Discerning the Rights of Man, you all should be familiar with it. It's been on our website. It is on our website. It's been on the carousel off and on. But it tells of the story of how animal magnetism, and it always is that, Era tried everything it could to keep those books from being in the hands of you and I. Everything was done. And at the end, Gilbert Carpenter Jr. did not last much longer, and it was because he was under such intense attack for so long.
Discerning the Rights of Man by Richard Oakes. You should all be familiar with it, as you should be familiar with the Carpenter books, because he explains our leader and how she lived this truth. And, again, in our watches, we take it up. This is exactly what she's telling us to do. And if we hold the right concept of her, it's a big glowing light. Each one of us holds that right concept. This will diffuse the wrong concepts. All mental.
Really, I think this... Oh, sorry.
Oh, please, go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking this is the time more than ever, because people are getting so-called healed by, oh, well, I adjusted the way I eat and I, you know, this is, I see this, you know, I'm improved or whatever. But she's saying Christian Science in this book, page 34, miscellaneous writings, one who has been healed by Christian Science is not only healed of the disease, but is improved morally. This is different. Christian Science is different. What she gave is different.
Thank
they
you,
can
Mark.
Try to do whatever. It is different.
Right. And any other so-called healing, whether it's medical or faith, is not really healing. Not permanent healing.
Yeah, it's what she says in retrospection, in introspection about faith cure. It's not the transformation of a life, not the total putting off the old for the new. It's a belief and a belief system, and so your beliefs maybe improve a little bit, but it's real science healing goes way down deep. I mean, if you hear Luann speak of it, I mean, she's an example of a transformed life coming out of utter hell now that she can barely remember. Collectania, page 81. The united plans of the evildoers is to keep Mrs. Eddy as she is, out of sight, and keep her as she is not, constantly before the public. This kills two birds with one stone. It darkens the spiritual sense of students and misguides the public. Why? Because it wrongly states the idea of divine principle that you are trying to demonstrate and hides it from the sense of the people. Keeping the truth of her character before the public will help the students and do more than all else for the cause. Christianity in its purity was lost by defaming and killing its defenders. Do not let this period repeat this mistake. The truth in regard to your leader heals the sick and saves the sinner. The lie has just the opposite effect. And the evil one that leads all evil in this matter knows this more clearly than do the Christian Scientists in general. Oh, she's saying, wake up, folks. The workings of evil, we can't be stupid. And as we have this right sense of her, and I will admit, when I first came here to this church, I had this darkened sense that's spoken of here, because the Peel books gave me that darkened sense. It seemed really creepy. I felt it was just really creepy. It wasn't until I read the Carpenter books that I had the right appreciation of Mrs. Eddy. Now, I'm going to end on something from page 178. It goes back to what Florence said about Mrs. Eddy, well, and her textbook, Science and Health. Because if it can destroy her and discredit her, it will discredit the textbook. The textbook is the Word of God. And this is a very interesting short paragraph. On April 15th, 1891, the Christian Science textbook lay on a table in a burning building. A Christian Scientist entered the house through a window and snatched this book from the flames. Instantly, the table sank, a charred mass. The covers of the book were burned up, but not one word in the book was effaced. If the world were in ashes, the contents of Science and Health, with key to the scriptures, would remain immortal.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Yes, it's important to remember that what's going on here is not a human activity. This is divine. And we should be on our knees in front of what's going on here. So let's have a great service.
Thank you all. And we'll see you at the service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.